Hello there, we are finally doing this, and welcome again to Fragile X Dad and Mom podcast. So how did we come up with this name? Well, we are Fragile X parents. Both of our kids are diagnosed with Fragile X syndrome, and I will go on and talk about Fragile X syndrome a little bit further down. Right now, I just wanted to tell you guys about the name. So that's how we came up with the name. That's just basically what our whole life revolves around, is Fragile X and being parents. So that's it. That's how we came with the name. So I am a huge podcast listener. I just started listening to podcasts maybe like a few months ago. So I've been trying to get Juan to do one with me because I think he has some of the best conversations. He's funny. And he's always making me laugh. He's always cheering me on. Whenever we're going through something, he always has like a million jokes about any kind of situation. So he's an amazing and special person. And he is the best dad. And he's the best special needs dad. And I think that the whole world needs to be able to see that. And I want to share that with you guys. So, my name is Erica, and I'm 27 years old, and I'm a stay-at-home mom. I am also the writer behind the blog OurFragileXLive.com. If you follow us on our social media page, it's also called OurFragileXLive. And we recently also launched our family's YouTube channel, also called OurFragileXLive. So, as you can tell, we like to advocate for Fragile X syndrome, because I think not a lot of people know about it, and it's our chance to let the whole world know about Fragile X syndrome. And that's pretty much it. Well, I'm also a homeschool mom of a five-year-old who has special needs, and now due to COVID-19, I'm also homeschooling our eight-year-old daughter, Amaya. So yeah, I'll let Juan introduce himself. Would you like to come in and introduce yourself?
Hey guys, well, we're finally doing this after, you know, Erica kept insisting. I didn't even know what a podcast was. I'm really learning how to use my iPhone, so I guess I'll give it a try. So, like she said, I'm Juan, I'm a mechanic, I'm 37 years old. I consider myself, you know, kind of funny. Like, you know, Erica mentioned some of my hobbies. Would probably be watching movies, going for hikes, you know, exploring new towns, you know, taking the kids. So everywhere we go, we take all the kids. Talking about kids, you know, this, what this whole thing's about. We're a blended family. When I first met Erica, she had Amaya, and I had our oldest, JJ. And when we got together, we became a blended family when we had Emmett. Currently, JJ's 16, Amaya's 8, and Emmett is 5, and that's our little family. Let me have Erica explain to you guys, you know, how this Emmett got diagnosed with, you know, the Fragile X, and, you know, give you guys the basics. Would you like to come in and, you know, explain to them?
Sure. I think that's going to be a very long story. Okay, so Emmett obviously is diagnosed with Fragile X syndrome and autism and epilepsy and intellectual disability, and there's other sensory processing disorder. I mean, I'm starting to lose count at this point. And Amaya is also diagnosed with Fragile X syndrome. We didn't find out that Amaya had Fragile X syndrome until Emmett was diagnosed. So that was a little twist there. And I'll tell you guys a little bit about Fragile X syndrome in case, obviously, you'd never heard of it like us. Before Emmett and Amaya were diagnosed, I didn't know it even existed, even though my brother also was diagnosed with Fragile X syndrome after we got the diagnosis for my son and for my daughter. So Fragile X syndrome is a genetic condition caused by a full mutation of the FMR1 gene. Symptoms include intellectual disability, behavioral and learning challenges, and various physical characteristics. For example, with Emmett, he has an elongated head and face and things like that. So he has a bigger head than typical people, I would say. And males are more frequently affected in general with greater severity. And Fragile X associated disorders can be passed on by carriers of the FMR1 gene mutation who have no apparent signs of being a carrier. In some families, a number of individuals may be affected, while in other families, a diagnosed individual will be the only one known family member to exhibit symptoms. Also, in some families, only carriers are identified and there are no apparently affected family members. And that was pretty much our case with our family. Did you want to say something?
Yeah. Sure. I'm not being rude or nothing, but, you know, for us, you know, people that don't have, you know, time to research and stuff like that, can you tell us, you know, what's Fragile X? You know, how do you get Fragile X? I mean, you know, like in simple words.
Simple words. I mean, I could take you guys back to biology class in high school. So we all have genes, obviously, and we passed on these genes. So in Fragile X syndrome, we pass down. I am a carrier of the Fragile X syndrome, so I pass down the gene that the Fragile X syndrome to my children. So basically, I have a 50-50% chance of having a child with Fragile X syndrome, and in our case, both of our kids ended up with Fragile X syndrome. So that's basically, I mean, pretty much.
So you're trying to say, you know, in terms that I understand, so a boy consists of an X and a Y, right?
Yes.
And a girl consists of two X's.
Yes.
So Emmett would be his, since it's called Fragile X, one of his X chromosomes didn't develop, right?
Yes, or it just depends on the amount of repeats. So I know for Fragile X syndrome, they're called CCG repeats. I mean, I could look it up, but they're called CCG repeats, and that's how many times the X chromosome repeats itself. And we all have it, obviously, the FMR1 gene. We just don't we have it at a normal range. So if you, let's say you have your repeats exceeds, I think the normal range is between, it can be under 20, but it can't be over 300, because then you're considered full mutation, which that was the case with our kids. They're considered full mutation Fragile X syndrome, which their CCG, I think it's called CCG or CCC or something, repeats, exceeds more than 300 repeats. My amount of repeats is 91, so I'm considered a carrier. I don't really know the numbers. I can probably pull them up, but I'm a carrier because I'm under the 200 repeats. So if you're under the 200 repeats, you're just a carrier. So you just pass it on to your children or to in the future. So for Emma and Amaya, they just became full mutation because they're over 300 repeats. And for typical people, we all have the FMR1 gene. It doesn't repeat itself. So then you just have it. It's just not activated, I would say.
Yeah.
So you can understand?
Yeah.
It's just not activated. So that's pretty much what happens with us. I guess that's what happened with us. And yeah, that's pretty much my explanation of Fragile X syndrome.
Well, thank you for explaining it to us in simple terms where, you know.
I feel like I rambled off, like.
You did. I just didn't want to interrupt.
Yeah, I want to explain it in better terms, and maybe we'll do a whole episode explaining it in, like, not dumber terms. I'm not saying you're dumb. But I'm just saying, like, in terms that everybody can understand. Because it's really complicated. I mean, when they told us that diagnosis, I mean, they sat down with us and they explained it. And I was like, what are they talking about? Like,
they actually,
they drew it out for us and everything.
Yeah, they actually drew, you know, little stick figures and, you know, for us to understand. And, you know, I still, you know, sometimes don't understand some of these terms. And that's, you know, when I ask Erica, you know, can you define it in easier terms? Because, I mean, I really don't have the time to, you know, sit down, look it up, because I'm at work all the time. And when I get home, the only thing I want to do is take a shower, spend time with the kids. And by the time, you know, she explains to me, we're lying down in bed and she's running through the whole, you know, day, what Emma did in the day, what she did with them, and how meetings with therapists went, and, you know, I don't have really time. So she explains it to me in easier terms where I understand.
I give him a summary. I mean, if that makes sense. Like, you know how you read the whole book and then there's the... It's called a summary, right?
Summary, yeah.
Or it's a description. Then there's that summary in the back. I give you like the summary of everything.
Or what I like to call cliff notes.
Cliff notes, yes. So I do cliff notes for him. But I feel like, there is a better way to explain it. It's just so complicated. I mean, you have to explain like the whole Fragile X thing, the carrier thing. And it's just like everything. And I also wanted to add that it is the number one known cause of autism. So I remember when Emma got diagnosed, when we went to go see the Fragile X specialist, she's like, I don't know why when a child gets diagnosed with autism, they don't test them for Fragile X syndrome, because it is the number one known cause of autism, but nobody is testing for it. Mm. So how are parents ever going to find out? So yeah, that brings us up to the next conversation, which kind of gets a little bit intense. Are you ready for that one?
I don't know. Oh, by the way, she did forget to mention... Erica is in charge of the Hispanic Fragile X. What is it? The Fragile X? No,
you
the.
Don't know.
She's in charge of so many things.
He doesn't know. You could tell when he's like, I don't know.
It's just, oh my God, you know, keeping up with this girl. What is it? The Spanish.
It's a support group for Spanish speaking parents, who have a child with any disability. I mean, particularly maybe autism, because that's who the community around me, you know, has more children. I mean, in my area, there's only like maybe 2 cases of Fragile X syndrome. So it's not, you know, there's not a lot of cases of Fragile X syndrome. I think it's 1 in every 4,000 kids are diagnosed with? No, I think it's 1 in 6,000 maybe. I don't remember the exact number, but... Yeah, that's very rare. It's not like autism that it's 1 in every 59 cases that are diagnosed with autism. So I aim it towards autism. And then I always advocate, you know, for them to get tested for Fragile X syndrome. And I offer in Spanish because I am Spanish speaking. So, and I feel like that community needs more support because I speak from experience because my mom, you know, she has a special needs child too, my brother. And I think this is unique because I get so many different perspectives. So I get the special needs mom perspective, and then I get the special needs sister's perspective, which is totally different. So yeah, let's talk about the diagnosis now. See, he's just trying to not talk about the diagnosis because he still, I don't know, does it make you nervous?
It doesn't make me nervous. It's just, you know, it knocked me off my feet. And I mean, to be honest, it's like, you know, I said in the beginning, I just knew of Down syndrome. I knew of autism, and that's it. I didn't know there were so many different things. And it's just, you know, I got overwhelmed, and I still get overwhelmed thinking there's so many syndromes, and you know how, you know, I have millions of questions. So I mean it has to be done, so let's go with it. And you know,
so Emmy got diagnosed with autism first. He got diagnosed when he was, I believe he was about 18 months when he got diagnosed with autism, and he got diagnosed with autism by a neurologist. And this was the third neurologist I had seen, because Emmett was seeing a neurologist because of his size of his head. They thought that he had maybe hydrocephalus, so he was referred out to a neurologist and a neurosurgeon at the time. And he was also... they did an MRI, I think the first test that they ever did was an ultrasound. And then they discovered that he did have a little bit of excess liquid in his brain. We decided not to do a shunt and just to wait it out, like the one of the neurologists recommended, that just to wait it out. And sometimes it just disappears with age, and you know, your brain develops, so it just disappears. And in Emmett's case, thank God it disappears, so he never needed a shunt. And we just kept following up with neurology. And we also follow up with neurology because he was also diagnosed with epilepsy.
Now, just in case, you know, some people don't know, what's a shunt?
A shunt. So they place it in the back of your ear. They make, like, I don't know, an incision in your skull. And then they put like, I don't know, I would say like maybe like a tube. I don't know what it's called. Yeah, it's like a tube, and it goes, so it's supposed to drain the liquid. So it's supposed to drain the liquid from your brain, the liquid from your, because he had excessive fluid, so it's supposed to drain the fluid and, you know, guide it to where it's supposed to be. But yeah, that's basically what that shunt was for. But Emmett never needed it, thank God. And I mean, he still has a big head, but we didn't know it was just because he has fragile X, not because of other reasons at the time. So we were seeing neurology for that, and the neurologist, the first one I saw many neurologists, I think. The first one I saw, he looked at him and he's like, there's nothing wrong with him. He does have a little bit of excessive liquid. And he was like, okay, well, that's fine. I want a second opinion. So I talked to the pediatrician. She referred him out again. We got a second opinion. And the second neurologist was like, well, I kind of think that, you know, yeah, he has the, you know, a little bit of hydrocephalus, but it's not nothing to be concerned. But I'm kind of concerned about his development. And I think that's when there was a lot of red flags. I was always concerned about Emma's development. I think since the moment he was born, I knew that he was different. I knew that there was something going on. I think when the light switch turned for me was when he was like around between six to eight months, because he would babble like ma ma ma, like that sound, and then I don't know where he just stopped and he just vanished from one day to the other. And then also, you know, at 8 months, and he was 8 months and he couldn't lift up his head, he couldn't sit up, I would throw the ball at him and he wouldn't catch it, or, you know, he wasn't eating, he was struggling feeding, and it was just so many struggles that he was going through. And I remember looking at that app, because I had that baby development app that I think all new parents download on their phone. And it would send you notifications about their milestones. And I remember looking at that and I was like, okay, well, my baby's, you know, he's around 6 to 8 months. He should be able to lift up his head. Emmett wasn't lifting up his head. You would sit him up and he would just fall straight down. And even to bathe him, it was just so hard because you needed somebody to hold his head, somebody to hold his bottom. And it was just really hard. So I think that's when it was like, okay, there's something going on. And that's when I started like advocating for him, and I started, you know, arguing with the pediatrician that he had at the time, like, hey, you need to listen to me. There's something wrong with my baby. He didn't listen. I was like, my baby always cries. Emmett was crying. Do you remember? Like,
it's like I told her. I mean, my oldest, it's been, you know, a long time since, you know, I dealt, you know, with kids. Because, you know,
with babies.
And I told her, I honestly don't remember being this hard. And he would cry literally like every hour. I go, there's, you know, we checked, he's changed. We gave him the bottle and he would cry. Oh, we had bags underneath their eyes. And I told her, was it this hard with Tamaya? And what would you say?
I was like, I would try to remember with Amaya, but it was never that. I mean, it was hard, but it wasn't that hard. I mean, Amaya also struggled with feeding problems when she was a baby, but it was never to the point where Emma would just cry day and night that you cannot please that guy. I mean, I remember the only way you could please him was with a swing. He had a little swing and he would.
He actually went through what, two swings?
Yes, he did.
He burnt the motors out in the swings.
Because he would swing. That was the only way he could sleep. I know you're not supposed to let them sleep in that swing, but he would literally not sleep. I remember one time we took him to the emergency room, remember?
Right.
That he wasn't sleeping. So we took him to the emergency room, and the nurse just looked at me like I was crazy. But I was like, he hasn't slept in a whole like 24-hour period, and he's a baby, he's supposed to nap, but he was not napping, he was like a nightmare. So back to neurology. He got his first seizure when he was one, right after his first birthday, so he got his first seizure then, and that's why we stayed in neurology for a very long time, because he had a seizure. Then we knew he I kept saying he has autism, and the pediatrician, well, I moved him from that crappy pediatrician to a new one because he was not listening to me, and I moved him around 6 to 8 months. I did a lot in that period. Now that I realize it, I moved him pediatricians, we took him to neurology like a million times, and then the pediatrician that he had at the time, the new one, she was the one that was like, okay, well, even if he has autism, like, I can't diagnose him because he's so young. And I don't think you're going to find anybody in the area that can diagnose him that young. So then when I went to the next neurologist, because I wanted a third opinion, after he had the seizure, I wanted a new neurologist. So then I saw somebody new, and he was so honest. I remember he was too honest. I think that if you're not ready to hear honesty, you shouldn't go with him. Because he is so blunt. I don't think you ever met him, Dr. Arish.
No.
He is very honest. I think he broke me a few times. Because he's just brutally honest. He tells you like it is. And I think it's great. I think it's awesome because he tells you like what you need to do, what's going on with your child. But I also think that if you're not ready to hear the truth, then you shouldn't go with him because he's going to tell you exactly like it is. And he did. He told me, hey, you know, I think that, yeah, he has autism, but I also think it's something else. And I think that you should prepare yourself for the worst. You know, he might not ever talk. The way he looks, I don't think he's going to walk anytime soon. And I mean, at this time, Emmett's already going to turn one. And I'm like, oh my God, you saying that he's not going to walk? And he's like, yeah, I mean, he's going to walk, but it's going to take him a really long time and a lot of physical therapy, and he's going to need a lot of support. And then he asked me, oh, do you work? And I was like, not at the time. He's like, well, I suggest you dedicate yourself to your son because he's going to need so much support. And I left crying because I was like, oh my God. And then he gave me that epilepsy diagnosis the same day too. So I was devastated that day because he told me like, okay, he has epilepsy. And by the way, your child's completely disabled. You know, he's not going to talk. And even if he does talk, it's not going to be in conversations with you. So, you know, he's probably just going to say some words and that's it. And, you know, it was hard to hear. I think it was very hard, but I needed that. Like, I needed that because he was like, okay, well, we're going to find those answers. If he has a different disability, we're going to find out for you. So then he referred me to a geneticist, and that's where we got all the answers in geneticist. And I did all these appointments by myself up until geneticist. Yeah.
And the thing is that, you know, I really couldn't leave, you know.
I mean, you could have asked for the day off, but I think still in denial. Like, a lot of those appointments, you were still like, no, there's nothing wrong with him. There's nothing wrong with him. Or he's going to outgrow it. Or I don't know what it was.
Well, that was in the beginning.
Yeah, but
until I seen that he couldn't sit down on that dinosaur, remember? Have you guys ever seen, you know, The Good Dinosaur? Well, Erica got him a little rocking, you know, dinosaur. And, you know, she was all excited. They got it for Christmas. I was like, oh, okay. And when she went to go sit him down at Christmas Day, you know, he couldn't sit on that dinosaur. He couldn't hold on to the little handlebars and anything. And that's when I hit me. Okay, well, there's something wrong.
Yeah, he was like one.
Yeah, there's something wrong. And, you know, some of these appointments, there's so many appointments that she would be making. Sometimes all week she would be gone, you know.
But I mean, I would tell you like, hey, he's going to have this appointment. It's like so important. I remember when we got the results for the epilepsy, I was like, oh my God, I think he has epilepsy. I think he's going to have this and that. I mean, you still didn't make the effort to be like, hey, I would just call in today and go. I mean, it's true. But I think a lot had to do with like, you didn't accept it. Like you were still like, oh, maybe it's just going to go away.
True, but now I'm on board.
I mean, but it did take you a while. You have to
admit. Well, yeah, you know, what parent, you know, once, you know.
Because even, like, I remember telling your mom, and then, oh, he has an appointment with neurology, and she's like, oh, well, you know, he'll be fine. He, you know, he looks fine. He looks normal, whatever, you know, they say normal means. He looks so normal. He looks great. And then I'm like, no, he doesn't. Like, they weren't seeing what I was seeing every day. Like, you know, so I felt like a lot of the time, I was just a crazy person. Because you would never back me out. When your mom would say that, you would never be like, hey, you know, my son is behind. you just stay quiet. So what does that mean? Can you explain? Tell me. What does that mean? That you were denial or you just didn't want to speak up? Or you weren't
ready? I honestly didn't want to tell my, you know, my parents to begin with, you know. But that would be another story that we'd, you know, get to because we're so off, you know.
The topic.
Yeah, you're way off.
Well, you got to say it like it is. Okay, so yeah. Long story short, we went to geneticist. The geneticist was great. I'm probably pronouncing it wrong. But he is amazing. He got us our Fragile X diagnosis. And you can tell us about that day since you were there. And I've been talking about the other stuff.
Which were the...
When we got the diagnosis for Fragile X.
Well, you know, we went to, you know, was it Dr. Sheen? Mm-hmm. We went there. And, you know, he was testing for everything. Well, actually, no. Let's go back. So we went and got tested. And we were waiting. They said it was going to be a couple of weeks. A month went by.
It wasn't a month. They lost the results the first time. They lost the results.
Yeah, I know, but that's where I was going.
Oh, okay.
Erica likes to interrupt a lot. So they lost the results. So he calls us back. And there we go. It was a nightmare to get Emmett to get tested. Blood drawn, actually. And...
Did you go the second time?
I went the second time. Oh. I did not go the first time.
Okay.
And he called us right away. It wasn't even like a week.
I think it was like 3 days.
Yeah.
And he called us and he refused to give us the results over the phone.
Yeah. So we showed up there. And yes, I took the day off to go.
Yes. Yay. Hey, Juan. Good job.
Yeah. It just, you know. You know,
it takes a lot for you to take a day off work.
It is, like, you know, it's just
like hard. I have to break down and be like, you have to go with me.
It's just, you know, to me, I mean, I know it's important and stuff like that. It's just hard since I'm the only one, you know, providing and bringing in, you know, got to put gas in the car to go to these appointments. So, but yeah. Anyways, that's, you know, besides the point.
Okay. Yeah. Just keep going. Cause I'm going to get fired up.
So we got there, went in, and, you know, the receptionist brought us into his room, and, you know, we could hear, you know, Dr. Sheen pacing back and forth.
He's running around the whole office, printing out like a million worksheets, calling I don't know who.
And, you know, we're just waiting. It seemed like forever.
It was actually an hour.
Was it?
We waited in the
room. It seemed like it was hours. And he finally comes in and he brings in some assistant with them. And then, you know, he started going.
No, he brought a lot of people. He brought in a resident that he was training. And then he went and he found a psychologist. I don't know where. And then he found a neurologist. He had and the social worker and people like that. He had like a bunch of different experts there because he thought, oh, my God, like. Because I remember on the phone when I spoke with him, I was like, well, why can't you just give me the results over the phone? And then he's like, no, I think you need to come in with someone else. And then that's when he was like, oh, well, it's because I've never really diagnosed anybody with Fragile X.
And this is the thing that, you know, he was, you know, I guess tripping out because there's, you know, besides Emmett, you know, with Fragile X that it's been properly diagnosed is, you know, him, Erica's brother, and I think there's someone else that was at
there's someone in on the ASD moms group too.
It's total what, three
here? There's not a lot of cases I know
in Southern California.
I know he found a few families. Well, now I discovered that there's more, but at the time when Emma was diagnosed, we didn't really, and the doctors really didn't know in our area, they didn't know a lot of cases. Like, Emma got tested through UCSF, and it's through Valley Children's too. He checked in the Valley Children's sites or whatever, and he said that he could only find like two other families at the time that mm-hmm. had locally that had Fragile X syndrome. And he got me their phone numbers, or he gave them my phone number so they could call us, so they could be like for support, you know, for family yeah. support.
So, he started explaining, he gives the whole definition, you know, just like Erica did earlier.
And we didn't cry.
We didn't cry or nothing. And, you know, me being me, I asked, well, okay, you know, it's nice, you know, the definition. I feel like, you know, you're reading out of the dictionary. So in plain, simple terms, what does it mean? And that's when he actually drew a picture and little stick figures and everything explaining what it means. And I was like, oh, I understand. And then that's when, you know, they said, okay, well, let's test Erica. And let's test, you know, our daughter, Amaya. I was like, oh, okay, but I mean, you know.
That kind of threw me off guard. Because I was not expecting, because he asked us a few questions. And then he asked, oh, do you have any concerns about Amaya? And I was like, well, kind of, not a lot. Just like, you know.
Her speech?
Her speech at the time. Her speech was a little delay. But I mean, I already had asked at school. And they were like, no, it's fine, it's fine. So I was like, okay, well, I just went with it. But, why do you keep pushing it? So then, like, I don't know. I just didn't feel like it was necessary. But he changed. He was like, okay, I think it's necessary. That's enough concern. Enough, you know? So then Amaya got tested. And sure thing. She came back positive.
Now, that was a shock.
That was a little twist. I feel like with Emmett, I was really emotional. But I was more relieved to get a diagnosis.
That we knew.
Because I was the crazy lady. I was the crazy one that everybody kept thinking I was just crazy and there was nothing wrong with him. I was over exaggerating because I have a special needs brother. I think that my son has a disability. So I just felt like I was being singled out all the time as the crazy person. And then when we got the diagnosis, I felt like, okay, well, now I can show you that there is something. I'm also relieved. But then it backstabbed me because I was a carrier. Yeah. So I passed it on to Emmett.
So, yeah, that's when we find out that, you know, the reason why Emmett has, you know, fragilized it was because, you know, he was passed down by her. And that's what I, you know, as you guys know, you know, when we said our age, you know, a lot of people were concerned that, you know, that's why, you know, Emmett ended up being like that was because of a big old age gap and because I was much older and, you know, and ends up being that, you know, it was because she was a carrier. And we didn't even know that, you know, she was a carrier or anything like that. And, you know, even after, you know, we found out that she was a carrier, I mean, it's, we didn't plan on, happening, you know. But it's like I told her, you know, you shouldn't blame yourself, you know, you didn't know. Or you didn't know what, you know, with Amaya either. That, you know, she was a special needs. And like I said, you know, I think I took it much harder when I found out that Amaya was a carrier. Because with Emmett, we knew there was something wrong, but we didn't know what. So we were kind of preparing ourselves. We never prepared ourselves to find out that, you know, she was a carrier and she was affected by it too. And
she's not just a carrier, though.
No. I mean, well, yeah, she has the full mutation just like Emmett.
Yeah, that was very, I don't know. That was very different.
Oh.
It was hard, I think, to accept hers the most. Because she was so high functioning. And now I see it when I meet other parents that have higher functioning kids on the spectrum. Because I do support groups. You know, I go to support groups for moms with who have kids who have autism. So when I see that they have a higher functioning kiddo, I can kind of relate to them, I guess, in a way. Just because Amaya is very high functioning. She's a straight A student. She's smart. She's always, you know, excel in every single area.
And she also got tested, I believe, at was it Stanford?
Yeah, she did get tested for autism, but she did not meet that criteria. And she got tested twice, actually, through UC Davis and through Stanford, but she didn't. So she's not, I mean, they thought she did because her IQ is so high. They just thought she had, you know, this amazing gift. I mean, she does because her IQ is very advanced, and that it doesn't explain any of it. It threw everybody off because she has full mutation fragile X, and then she has this crazy IQ off the roof, and it doesn't go, you know, because she should be more delayed than she actually is.
But one thing that we started noticing from her that it's effective because of the fragile X is her severe anxiety.
She does suffer from severe anxiety. That is very true. So, yeah, I think this is going to be where we're going to end. Because,
girl, I could keep going all night, but
I think we can end here. And then we can just pretty much come back and talk about other stuff because we have so many conversations to talk about.
So
I'm sorry again, up on you a little bit. I felt you look like uncomfortable for a second.
I did, but I mean, it's like I told you at the beginning, you know, I was the one, you know, going, I was like, okay, you know, you're exaggerating. You're the crazy lady with the cats. I go, you know, started thinking, you know, this girl needs to find a TV show or something to watch.
I thought it was because I was struggling with postpartum depression.
Yeah.
I think that's why a lot of people are like, oh, I mean, she has postpartum depression. So obviously she's out of her mind.
I never looked down or, you know, I supported her still. I was like, okay, we'll take him. But I mean, I was still in denial. I would find excuses, you know, like, well, give it a little more time. Maybe his back will get stronger.
You did a lot of those. I remember when, with the feeding, with the walking, I remember we had that meeting with CVRC when he got evaluated to get services. Yeah. And the CVRC is the Central Valley Regional Center where they offer early intervention services. And Emma got evaluated for those services when he was about 9 months old, and we started services when he was about 10 months. And yeah, you didn't want to attend.
No.
You didn't. You were like, no, you just decided to leave.
I did.
Do you recall?
Yeah, I went to work.
Yeah, it was during his lunchtime. I scheduled it during lunchtime so he could be there, but he still decided to leave. Anyways, so, yeah, we'll have all those conversations of honesty, as you can tell. I mean, I don't want to gain up on you, but I'm just saying, like, I want to tell the truth, like, what I felt, and I want you to be able to tell how you feel from your perspective.
And that's the thing that, you know, I think that that's what's helped us out, that, you know, we're able to talk about this. And, you know, our errors or, you know, it's a learning experience. You know, for other struggling parents out there, it's not easy. It's not easy, you know, realizing that, you know, one day you're over here, you know, thinking, okay, well, you know, hey, we're having a baby. And then you find out you're having a baby boy. And next thing you think, okay, well, I'm going to have him wear baseball caps. I'm going to sign him up for baseball and have all these plans. And then in the blink of an eye, you know, your world gets shattered. Now you're planning on teaching them how to walk, teaching them how to do the simple little things that, you know, people take granted. You guys are not out there, you know, by your guys' selves. And I'm glad that we're being honest because, you know, people are out there thinking, I was like, oh, well, you know, I felt this way. Am I the only one? Am I a bad person for feeling this way? And no, you're not. You guys are not alone. And hopefully you guys, you know, listen to us.
I think that brings us up to our next podcast. I think we're going to talk about our expectations, the expectations that we had for Emmett before he got his diagnosis. And we'll end it at that because we are exceeding way more time than I anticipated. So that's it. I mean, this is the official episode 1. And we are so happy to have you guys. And we're going to close it. And Juan's pinching me because he wants to say something.
Well, I just want to let you guys know from Fragile X, Dad and Mom. Thank you for your guys listening. Hopefully you guys support and subscribe, you know, to us.
And feel free to comment. I know that you'll be able to do like voice memos. We're still kind of new to this, so we don't know how it works. But we'll try to respond to comments. And you can also reach us on our email. I'll attach it below. It's ourfragilexlife@gmail.com. And you guys can reach us there or you can find us on social media. We're on all kinds of social media. Okay? So I'll attach to everything below. And thank you. Goodbye.